Welcome to the Cult Film Showdown's Lost Episodes. I am James Cotta. We are here for our final episode of our Octagon Inappropriate season, in which we'll be talking about Dark Star and the Jigsaw Murders. I'm joined by Nick Boxer.
Ayo. Lost in the wilderness still, but what can you do?
And Jack Hall is also here.
Yes, I'm also here. Unlike our audio from the last recording, where we talked about Dark Star and the Jigsaw Murders, and then found out that the audio didn't make it alive, a victim of the Jigsaw Murderer, I believe. And therefore, I guess we're going to quickly talk about those films, but instead of repeating ourselves and having it not be organic and come across properly to our listeners, we're just gonna give quick recaps instead of a full episode and just go through those quickly. I guess that's the plan here, is it?
Yeah, I think that's, I started nodding my head there as if that would help. We're a little out of practice as well. Yes, we are gonna talk about these flicks a little bit. We recorded it long enough ago that I don't remember what we said, so hopefully there'll still be some organic reactions. But I think we had thankfully done we had already hit the peak for the season with Girls with Balls. We're going to wrap these up, and then pretty soon we'll be posting the episode where we tell you what we're doing next season, which we're just figuring out.
Well, and we're going to talk about a short film.
Yes, we do have a short film to talk about as well. We'll be taking a quick talk about All You Can Eat, a toxic burrito horror film. All right, first up, we're going to talk about Dark Star from 1974. And Nick, tell us what happens in Dark Star.
You know what? I remember having trouble telling you what this was about, but it's about a bunch of guys on a spaceship who kind of hate each other. And the computer goes insane. There's not a lot going on in this one. You guys liked it a whole much more than I did. Interesting as maybe a backup feature to if you're really interested in Alien or something.
A computer that hates them. So, Dark Star, this is John Carpenter, basically the same thing. John Carpenter's first film, written and co-written and starring Dan O'Bannon, who went on to do Alien. So there's a lot of connective thread here. Jack, tell us a bit about Dark Star. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, those are probably the most two important things that you mentioned. I mean, it is the first film for John Carpenter, a student film that got picked up and they shot a bunch of extra stuff in order to make it a full-length feature film. And then they said to them, boy, that stuff is boring. Make another cut and shoot some more stuff. So they shot some more stuff. And it went from like a $8,000 budget up to about a $300,000 budget. By the time it was all said and done, of course, these numbers are difficult to verify. I mean, it's essentially Aliens. If Aliens was, instead of scary, was a really cute beach ball and with little arms and legs and a little bit of 2001 and some philosophical discussion that doesn't make any sense, but sure is funny. It's got a lot of very... It's got a lot of gap. There's a lot of really boring stuff. And that's after they made them do the producers made them do a cut. But there is a special edition out there. The one that's probably most common is the theatrical cut, 86 minutes long. But there's a special edition that's something like 60 or 71 and a director's cut that's like 68, something like that. Cut off a lot of the more boring stuff at the beginning because nothing's moving at the beginning. It's not until you get to the elevator scene that anything is worth anything in this movie. Once that scene happens, there's a couple of good gags. That scene's pretty tense. There's some interesting stuff. It's definitely crazy, but you need to get past the boredom of the first few minutes. Keep in mind, like Dan O'Bannon said, this is either the best looking student film of all time or the worst looking studio film of all time. And I think that kind of sums it up pretty much.
Well, that elevator scene does make the movie. It is a bit of a kind of a historical piece, just for placing this development of science fiction as well as these specific creators, because it does come kind of halfway between the Planet of the Apes and Star Wars. So it fits into a 2001, like it's 4 or 5 years, 6 years after 2001, something like that, ish. And so you have this kind of moment in science fiction of transitioning from the highbrow sci-fi of Asimov era and into space opera, and the less hard sci-fi. Is soft sci-fi a term? Like hard sci-fi is, but soft sci-fi? Does anyone call it that?
It is now.
It is now.
I think the term that most people use is science fantasy.
That sounds nicer, yeah. that sounds like it's not a knock against it, yeah. And I think there's bits. I think there's bits. I think it's... I don't think I go back to it more than I think I do, but it's because I forget so much of it that it seems like a much longer since I saw it, because it's there's only a few parts that really are memorable to me.
And I do remember you saying before that it was one of those films that early in your life was considered among many of your people that you knew, kind of that hidden gem that nobody knew. And that you felt like you're part of an exclusive club if you knew it, because it was so obscure. And of course, in this day and age, things are either more obscure than ever or less obscure or completely not obscure at all. It's either completely lost and we'll never see it again, or it's easy to view for just about everybody. And this is one of those films that's easy to view for everybody. As I say, if you watch the right cut, you'll really enjoy this film. Because it moves at a good pace when you watch the right cut, and it gets rid of the problems with the film, which is the opening. Like, they had a sequence in the film where it was 45 minutes of them sleep, or 45 seconds of them sleeping and not moving. And the producer's like, you can't put, that doesn't do any. And they're like, well, it's funny. They're like, no, it's not. It's 45 seconds of nothing happening, you know? And this is it. I mean, it is young guys experimenting, coming into their own. It feels like a John Carpenter film to me to a large degree, but super low budget. I mean, if you're looking at Carpenter or even Dan O'Bannon and, you know, some of the great stuff he did, like Return of the Living Dead and stuff like that, this is probably on the lower end of quality films. But again, it started off as a $2,000 student film. I mean, what do you expect? You have one character, you have crazy moments. You have your one character who's like dead, but frozen. And so they can still talk to him because they can reactivate his brain. And all he cares about is how the Yankees are doing or something. like stuff like that. Like you have your out there bits, but it's an odd film. It's know what it is before you watch it. And if you're a huge film buff or a huge card cover buff, you do want to see it. But if you say, that's all right, I'll move on to something else. Well, we have another film for you we're going to discuss.
And we're going to hustle on to that.
I think so. I think that's all we need to do on Dark Star at this point, you know, unless anybody has anything else they want to say. Nick, you've been largely quiet except for explaining the movie, which we were largely quiet during. Is there anything...
No. Yeah, unless you have an interest in other John Carpenter, just in John Carpenter in general. I don't think there's really a need to watch Dark Star whatsoever. It's 78 minutes or whatever the hell long it was that I wish I had back.
I mean, I've spent 78 minutes on a lot less. I always love the phrase, like, that's an hour and a half I'm not getting back. Like, you weren't giving back the other ones either. Like, the best hour and a half you ever spent, also not coming back. So I don't think the stakes are as high as you think they are. Now, as Jack was saying, some movies, some things are so obscure that they're essentially lost. That is one of the challenges of today's age, is that if you know what you're into the way that you did in the 80s, you're talking about things that are so incredibly obscure now. There's almost no one to talk to them about. That's why they have no critical mass. And one of these is the Jigsaw Murders, which is our last film of the season. And
unannounced film for the season.
That's right. We didn't even put it in the original announcement. I think it's some, I believe how it happened is I saw this on Tubi, and I said, this thing's crazy. This movie is so weird. We should look at it. So we tacked it on. Nick, tell us what happens in the Jigsaw Murders.
Well, if we hadn't watched Darkstar, I could watch this a third or fourth time. No, Jigsaw Murders. It is your basic drunk cops in bad suits try to catch a serial killer. The mystery is not deep on this one, but it is a hell of a lot of fun. You only have one suspect, and there's a fight in a water park. The jigsaw clue is so incredibly dumb that it makes you laugh. It's a great little film. If you like drunk cops, this is the film for you, man. I 10 out of 10 on this one. I love this movie.
It is a fun film. I actually started working on a jigsaw puzzle because I watched this movie. The crux of this movie, probably should mention Chad Everett is the lead, and Michelle Johnson is plays his daughter, and Yaphet Kotto steals the movie in his only 2 or 3 minutes he's on screen, but man, does he bring it as the incredibly weird mortician.
Oh man, and he does it with his mouth full, which I mean, that there's a word category that they're just missing.
You think he walked off
as an actor with a mouthful of sandwich?
You catering in this movie? You do? All right, I'm going to be taking advantage of that while we're filming. Like, I think that's the way it went. And they're like, well, here's Yaphet Kotto. I mean, we're not going to say anything. We're lucky to have him. He's the biggest star in the movie. To me, this film was boring as sin. Actually, come think of it. If sin is boring, then you're doing it wrong, isn't it? That's really not a...
That's a weird phrase, yeah.
Yeah, that is. But to me, this movie is like, if you were to take a list and go, okay, let's make a chalkboard here, or, you know, whatever, and put up every single cliche from every single 80s cop movie chasing a serial killer that you ever had. You would put it up on this one and then just mark them off as you go through them one by one by one. And to me, the movie, so I mean, I'm just bored looking at this going, oh man, I've seen this on like so many episodes of Hunter, you know, the nudity being the only thing that being added here. You know, it's like, Knight Rider, every TV show, I don't care. Like, from the 80s, like, just... But, I'll say this. While I was bored talking about it, I loved talking about it afterwards with you guys. It's a film that, like I say, it's boring to watch, but when you start to analyze it and you start going, what, they made this choice, and they made this choice, and what the hell were they doing there? And then you start talking about it and thinking about it, it becomes fun.
Well, the memorable part of this movie, The Jigsaw Murders, is that so there's pieces of a woman being found around town, and they go in, and this, the cops assigned, one being Chad Everett, a drunk, grizzled cop, like we've never seen in a movie before. I mean, yeah. In fairness, sometimes, like, it could be that we've seen so many movies that were copying The Jigsaw Murders. I mean, how many movies like this were there before? Okay, 1989. Okay, lots. this wasn't breaking new ground, I guess, in 1989.
No, the French Connection was out there, so.
I think VHS era was starting to wind down. So a zillion. I mean, it's only a couple of scenes away from being an erotic thriller. If they had, they could have gone that direction.
That director did almost exclusively. If you look at his library, the guy who directed this, I can't remember his name, but yeah, I mean, it's like Illicit Affair and Tender Hearts Mercies and things like that are like his other films. And it's like, yeah, just like, it's just like an erotic thriller time after time after time.
And it feels like he thought this was one, because there's some moments between the father and daughter that are so awkward. he's a little touchy-feely for a man with his adult daughter.
Well, I mean, she considers
that against the bachelorette party scene where a bunch of cops stand around and actually do a jigsaw puzzle.
Yes, this is the. Where the name hinges on is they have this leg, it's got a tattoo on it, that's all they've got to go on, and there's a bachelor party and a jigsaw puzzle with a mystery image on it is one of the gifts, but you can see the tattoo in the image, in the tease image that's on it. So they, to get the woman's identity, they have to sit and put together the jigsaw puzzle. They send the stripper away to work on the jigsaw puzzle. I mean, I think really like a few people could have focused on the puzzle more efficiently. And you know, you've paid her for the hour.
Really, what's 1 hour difference in the murders? I mean, you're still going to catch them or not going to catch them. No, that is, I think the whole thing between the father and the daughter, you know, Michelle Johnson is best known for being in Blame It on Rio, where she was underage when being fully nude many times during that film, because they got a court order saying from her parents saying they agreed that she could do the film. She really wanted to do it. And so you are a pervert if you go look up that film, by the way.
I mean, now.
But now, yeah, now that you know. You know, if you saw it before. But the thing is, in that movie, she spends the whole time banging Michael Caine, you know, as her father's best friend. So maybe her dad in this film is like, well, she seems good to go. Like, maybe he just watched the other film and couldn't help himself.
Or maybe it's just like older unintentionally men. Creepy.
Oh, isn't it?
I wondered if they were like seeing each other outside, but it is a little, it is like, especially at the very end, it's a little awkward.
Yeah. I like the by the way, the other partner, because the cop has a partner, of course. And of course, the cop, the Chad Everett or whatever here, he's drunk, which we mentioned. Not that it plays into anything except for when they wanted to. Another partner, of course, is going to get married, so he wants the murder solved before his marriage on the weekend. Because that's a new plot device, too. And then he gets shot, He's fine. He's not even injured at all. He's 100% by the time the movie ends. The weekend has come. He heals quickly. He's like Wolverine.
That is classic cop movie. It's classic 80s. Is just walk it off.
Walk it off.
You have to be in pain for exactly as long as the plot requires you to be out of action.
Yeah, I don't know. The toupee brought it was entertaining. I like the toupee.
Yeah, the killer in this film wears a bad toupee. And they talk about this bad toupee. And then at the end, the bad toupee comes off during a fight with the lead character. The lead character seems shocked that this guy is wearing a toupee. It's something. I say it's boring as sin, this movie.
That's a great freaking film.
I think what I really enjoyed about this movie too is that they do all of the setup for a whodunit, and then they find the photographer of the jigsaw puzzle, and there's and like everyone, including the cops, are just like, "Well, it's that guy," and there is no other search. The rest of the movie is just trying to prove that this is the guy who did it. So it's the weirdest. Like the whodunit ends at the end of the first act, basically.
Yeah, and then they let you know that this guy did it. They arrest him, but of course he gets off on the dumbest reason. The person who wrote this is definitely has never actually been to law school, because like the reason they give for him getting off is the dumbest, and yeah, it's like just whatever you need. Whatever you need to make
fair, the cops in this are pretty bad.
Also true.
Hey, they aren't that bad. They stopped looking at.
Really talked about.
They stopped looking at a naked woman who put together a jigsaw puzzle to catch the killer. I think they're dedicated or stupid.
I mean, their time management skills are poor, but. They give the impression of being very professional. Oh, I found it to be a fun flick. It may still be on 2B TV. Check your local area. So that was the Jigsaw Murders. That was seven episodes in the season, seven movies that we wanted to take a peek at and share with each other more than anything else. So what, Jack, what was your highlight of the series?
Seeing that I'm not the only one out there, I thought I was the only one. I didn't realize I'm not the only one who apparently loves sudden death. Seeing the numbers on our sudden death episode and how big they are and the kind of reaction we've gotten from that, that is... because I said before, this is a film that is, it would have been, except for its $50 million budget, would have been ideal for the Boogaloo, you know, octagon type deal. Like it's as much a cult film as I could think of a cult film being without being a small budget cult film. So yeah, seeing that was the highlight for me, was seeing those numbers and people agreeing with me on that film deserves some love. Other than that, Girls with Balls. I love Girls with Balls. What a fun, you know, I don't know, one I've had on my list to watch for a long time but never got around to, and probably never would have if it wasn't for this show. And I finally got to watch it, and as I said before, it's like a Shaun of the Dead type thing. It should have that kind of cult following. I think it's so much fun.
Yeah, it is it's definitely an underseen film, and just like, yeah, so incredibly fun and funny. I love that movie. I'm glad I could bring that to the table. Just noticing here on IMDb that not only does Girls with Balls have a much like a silly, yeah, like just a crazy low rating for like how good this movie is, but less than 4,000 people have voted on this, compared to the 38,000 that have voted on sudden death. So just that as an indicator. This one actually, I believe, is owned by Netflix, at least in our area. Check your Netflix, see if they've still got they have this. Otherwise, track it down wherever you can find it. What's its original title?
Because it is a French film or Belgian or something like that.
It's a French-Belgian co-pro. I think it's French but filmed in Belgium or vice versa. Actually, the original title is Girls with Balls.
Oh. I thought it had a French title.
Nope.
Doesn't Chicas con pelotos.
That'd be Spanish, but...
I don't know why, but that's what we have in our write-up for it on the website.
Oh.
For some reason.
Well, whoever did that probably did their research carefully. They didn't just copy and paste that from Wikipedia. They definitely dug deep.
Whoever that was,
they didn't just copy this from IMDb and change four words to make it seem fresh. At no point was AI used. In fact, no regular intelligence was used, let alone an artificial one.
Okay.
Now, Nick, how about you? What was your highlight?
It's pretty unoriginal, but I have to agree with you. Girls with Balls was a surprise. It was something that I don't think I would have ever watched from the picture that they present on Netflix. The title sort of turned me off. I thought it was a stupid volleyball comedy or something like that. I didn't really care about it. Would have never clicked on it. And it turned out to be probably one of my favorite movies I've seen in a couple of years. Just making a discovery like that is worth so much to me. I love the movie, so. Nice. And I've watched a couple times since.
Well, it's 77 minutes. You could watch this like three times in the runtime of some of the Oscar movies this year. So you can definitely get this in. Maybe four times in the case of The Brutalist. I'd say the most fun to talk about for me was In Name of the King, because I remember this being a terrible movie, and then sharing that with you fellas was so enjoyable, because you kind of get lost in how terrible it is until you're right into it, and then it just becomes more ludicrous as you pick away at the threads. That was
the Jigsaw Murders experience for me.
Because there's so, I mean, that's one of the classic things of the Octagon is looking at that and pulling the threads away because especially when you're bored with the film, like you start drifting, you glance at your phone more, and you miss these little bits, and then, or they subconsciously go, and then one of you guys will bring up like, well, did you notice that the catapults were weird, and like they used the catapult shot like 47 times in the Name of the King, now that you mention it. I have a follow-up for In Name King, actually, because we talked about how weird that movie is and how strange the editing and everything is and how incredibly confusing the final battle is. And I finally figured out why after I went back to it. In most filmmakers, when they make a big war movie, big army film, like this was in Clone Wars, it's in Lord of the Rings, you have either the good guys or the bad guys coming from the left of the screen, and then the opposing from the right. And you always keep that. So you're always like you're subconsciously getting that this is all these guys, all this one side, and this is all the other side. Looking back at it in the Name of the King, he's constantly switching from left to right for everyone. Like in the middle of a battle, like the orcs will be coming, not the not orcs, will be coming from the left of the screen and then the right of the screen and then the left of the screen again. Sometimes in the same, like not even go, like they're different shots within the same action where like they'll run toward the right of the screen and then it will immediately cut to them launching a catapult from the other side. Hold and that's why it's so confusing.
It's almost like you're saying Uwe Boll is a shitty filmmaker.
Oh no, this is all editing. This was shot well. This is all in editing. I'm assuming he had nothing to do with that process.
You're saying he's bad at the editing room.
I know it's bold. I hope don't at me.
Well, no, I'm hoping you didn't just ruin the guy's career. No, you outed him as not being talented.
Possibly unruinable. some people it can't be ruined, some people it can't be canceled because there's not enough to cancel.
He's got enough.
And even though he didn't like it, I did like finally after 20 years getting Jack Hall to watch Catwoman. Even though his preconceptions were his regular conceptions afterward.
I didn't dislike it. I just didn't like it. I found it to be just an average superhero film. I've seen so many.
After we recorded the Catwoman episode, Jack, you had said like they knew how to make the comic book movie by then. Like they had made this, you know, they had made two Spider-Mans. They had figured out the formula. So they should have known better than what they made on Catwoman. After we recorded, I saw Kraven the Hunter. And like they haven't figured this formula out as much as you think they do. Catwoman is like stellar on that spectrum. Some of the scenes even made sense in Catwoman.
Oh, now I gotta see Kraven the Hunter so bad.
Oh, I think if you did a double bill of Madam Web and Kraven the Hunter, you may never watch a superhero movie again. How could you? Yeah, the one that made Madam Web fans go, see, you know, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, well. The one that made them the Madam Web fan, you mean?
Which includes no one in the cast. I love how fast the cast turned on that movie. Like immediate.
hilarious.
Everyone, Sydney Sweeting explaining that really she just did it so that she could get a relationship with the studio. She never really... There's no defending the movie at all. Not even the wishy-washy. Well, you start making one kind of movie and then things happen. No. Kraven is actually more of a mess than Madam Web is. Madam Web's just boring. Kraven's a mess.
You got to watch them all through the Boogaloo lens and maybe you'll enjoy them.
I think coming back, I mean... Kraven to me was bad enough I could laugh at it while we were watching it, so that was good. That was a good day out. Like I wasn't expecting that much more from it than that. It was everything I expected and less. Yeah. All right, well that is Octagon Inappropriate, and we are working on what we're going to do next. Do we want to tease what we're doing? And then we'll have so we've been looking for another anthology. This was a bit of this past season of looking at movies was a bit of a different go because we specifically wanted to bring in movies that wouldn't have fit in the Octagon. So we would not normally have done many of these. Some as we watch them fit more than we would have expected. But a lot of them, like Jack mentioned with Sudden Death, the budget was just way too large to score high in the Octagon, no matter how crazy everything else is in it. So we're looking at a big list of anthologies, and we went back and forth over what we wanted to do. And we have finally settled on 2019 to 2023 Creepshow from Shudder. This is an anthology based on the Creepshow movie and comic movie first from the 80s. And so each episode is, I think there's two stories in each, in most of the episodes, or each episode?
And all but I think one. One or two might be. There's a two specials that are animated, I believe, that I think is full stories, and one episode I think that was full. But mainly it's two, it's two stories per episode, and about 45 minutes each episode. And of course, as you say, based on the movie from Stephen King and George A. Romero for, that also spawned. I finally just saw the sequel. I thought I had seen it again. It's one of those things, I've seen the original so many times, I thought I'd seen the sequel, and I hadn't. I just watched it about a week ago, and man, is that good. Both, and the original is good too. So I mean, there's high settings for this series, but it is very well thought of. I know it has, reviewers loved it. So we have reason to think we're going to have a fantastic season doing Creepshow from Shudder.
Excellent. Well, I'm excited. And yeah, within a little, won't be too long in your podcast and YouTube feeds that we will have the episodes we'll be doing. And then you can watch along. This was fun for us to do during Masters of Horror, to lay out the Hitchhiker, to lay out the episodes in advance. And folks could hear, I mean, we record about, our episodes run between a half hour, 45 minutes. You could actually use it as a audio commentary. I mean, it won't line up in the least. Like, it would line up so by accident, like, you know, the Wall and Wizard of Oz, that it just by coincidence lines up. But wait, maybe it's like line that. Up? I mean, they don't, but they do. Is it? It is the Wall, right? Yeah, it's the Wall. And people get a lot of meaning out of how it seems to line up, but I think it's like backwards. I think it's like backward masking. You hear what you want to hear when you play a song reverse. I think it's a lot of that. I would be curious if we matched up an episode with our commentary, if there's even a moment where we mention something that's on the screen at the time.
Well, you got a new project, Dan.
We are the Cult Film Showdown. You can follow us on your favorite podcast app, also on YouTube. Please subscribe, like, comment, especially comment. We love hearing both your love, your not love, and your complaints that we didn't just post the movie and instead you got us talking. We are also on Instagram at the Cult Film Showdown. We are on Patreon at the Cult Film Showdown. And we are sponsored by WeTalkPodcast.com, the home of the Octagon, where you can follow our search for the ultimate B movie. We Talk Podcast has a Facebook, and they have an X. And we will be back shortly with Creepshow.